Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
What is natural? When you read natural flavors on a label, most people don't realize it's often not real food at all. Those hidden ingredients quietly work against how your body feels and functions over time. That's why Just Ingredients uses only real food ingredients, so you know exactly what you're putting in your body. Stop guessing. Start knowing at justingredients.us.
Welcome to the Antler Up Podcast and our special series, The Antler Up Sessions. These episodes come straight from the conversations between myself and Dan Johnson of the Nine Finger Chronicles. Dan is one of the most respected voices in the whitetail world, known for his no BS approach, his deep knowledge of deer behavior, and his ability to connect hunters through stories that resonate. In this series, you'll hear discussions that dig into strategy, gear, access, and terrain, conservation, and the mindset that keeps us pushing forward. It's not just about filling tags. It's about learning, adapting, and finding meaning in every hunt. So settle in and enjoy this episode of the Antler Up Sessions with Dan Johnson.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles. This is the continuation of the Antler Up Sessions. And really what we're trying to do with these individual podcasts is actually try to get antlers down on the ground, my friend, not up in the air, but down on the ground. And so a lot has happened in the last 48 hours, 24 hours, you know, 72 hours-ish time frame for me, Jeremy. I got trail cameras out on one property.
I saw that. That looks nice.
One. Four cameras out. I only got four cameras out on one property, but I put them all in one area. I'm hoping one deer shows back up. I think this year he'll probably be somewhere around that 7-8 year old time frame. You know, as far as I'm guessing a 6-7 year old, give or take. I think I found out about him when he was about 3 or 4. And he's just kind of gone up ever since. Last year was a weird year where he was like a 4x2, like this giant, or a 4x3, like a giant 7-pointer, just like a couple crab claws, one giant G2, and then a small little brow tine. But if he goes back to what he was, like let's say recovers from, let's just say it was an injury that took him to this unique form, then he would also recover back to what he was previous years. Like he has the potential to be that giant, like 170 10-pointer.
Man, like, oh, man. Like,
could be gorgeous, could be a gorgeous buck.
Yeah,
and I'm looking forward to him showing up on trail camera within the next. My guess is if he doesn't show up within the next 10, 20 days, he's not on the farm anymore. So
okay.
I got him strategically placed throughout the farm where this deer was running last year and where he's run every year since I've known him. Same two draws, and he kind of lives in a little loop in some right in there. I've had encounters with him in some of these spots, and dude, I don't know. I'm just jacked that I finally got cameras out on one of my farms.
Well, yeah, because I mean, we've been chatting about the last couple of weeks about how you're saying you haven't been able to do that, but even just getting four out, it brings up the mood a little bit. You know what I mean? Like now you know, like, okay, I've been behind, but I'm okay now. Now I feel you got that itch kind of taken care of for now, and you know you still have work to do, but it relieves a lot of like just unwanted stress tension that you have about it.
Yeah. Now I got to find time. So we had state baseball this past weekend. Then we had, we had state baseball, and then we have yesterday I went and did the trail camera thing. So I literally spent more time on the road than I did actually setting up trail cameras. And then this weekend we have another like all-star. My son got nominated for this all-star thing that they do. I don't really know if it's technically a bunch of all-star type kids that are going to be playing. However, it's one of those things where I feel like it's just a money grab again. Where, hey, spend money and play baseball. I'm like, okay, well, whatever. So my son wants to do it. Another kid on it, his current team is going to be on the team. And so it should be a fun time, you know, for everybody.
Right. But
then I got to find the way to get to my new farm, which is like 3.5-4 hours away, depending on how fast I drive, and get that one set up too, because that's where I feel like I'm going to have the best chance of connecting with the deer, just because of the layout of the farm. So still a lot of work to do. And dude, I haven't even picked up my bow yet. I feel like a piece of shit when I get to crunch time like this.
Yeah. Yeah. My thing with that is once you pick it up and you stay consistent with it, then I mean, you'll be fine. I mean, the season's still a couple months away and you'll be dialed in with that. I got to ask you a question, Dan, because how you say, you've always hunted these properties. How do you go about finding them and getting connected with these individuals? Cause I know a couple of years ago when Seek won, right before they blew up in the urban hunting type thing, and they came out with a crash course of here's how we do it and ask and everything along those lines. What, like, is it word of mouth? Is it, do you hear through the grapevines? Are you e-scouting and like, man, that's a property I would like to check out. Like, is that a big process for you of figuring that out? Cause like you said, 3 to 4 hours, I mean, that's not an easy thing to come across.
Right. Yeah. So my main farm, the one that I've been hunting the longest, like this was before I had any type of Onyx. Mm-hmm. I've had it for like 17 years. I don't know how long Onyx has been out, but I literally had an old plat book and I was driving roads. Right. And so one day I was driving a road and I saw, and it was, I don't know, I was looking at satellite imagery, maybe Google Maps or Google Earth or something like that. And I just saw a big block of timber and I said, okay, well, I'm going to go drive by it. Stopped at their door and I said, hey, do you mind if I shed hunt this property? Or turkey hunt it? And she's like, yeah, that's fine. And so I said, hey, what about deer hunting? Well, deer hunting is, we got some people deer hunting on it already. So then I just turkey hunted it. And then I came back later in the summer and I was like, hey, I just want to say thank you for letting me turkey hunt it and shed hunt it this year. If anything ever opens up. And she's like, well, you're only a bow hunter, right? I'm like, yeah, I'm only a bow hunter. And she's like, okay, well, we have a couple bow hunters on there. I don't know how serious they are, but then we also have a group of shotgun guys that go through every year. And I'm like, okay, well, that right there is that there's my in, you know? And she's like, well, I don't see a problem if you, you know, if you only bow hunt, there's plenty of room here for everybody. And I'm like, okay, cool. I appreciate that. And then I've been hunting that farm for almost 20 years now. So
that's insane.
There was no e-scouting, really. There was no, at the time, I've never, you know, I'm coming to think of it, I don't know if I've ever really used, well, I take that back. I do a little bit of everything, man. A lot of it is driving. A lot of it is seeing someone out on a farm and just stopping and talking to people, really.
Right.
And trying to gather information that way. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, hey, how's your cattle? How are the crops looking this year? And you start off with something else, and then you get to deer hunting. And usually it's a, no deer hunting, right? No deer hunting. You get comfortable with them. But I've had also had properties where I've talked to a guy. I stopped at his house 3 years, and he told me no 3 years. And then on the fourth year, he said, guess what? Come hunt my farm. The guy who was hunting it moved to a different state. So if you've been asking the longest, you can come hunt it. So really it's about being personable, building relationships, and less about, for me anyway, it's less about scouting and then having some kind of tactic to go try to get the permission. Right. It's more of build the relationships with the people. And then once you get the farm, then break it down. So I don't necessarily look at a farm or a piece of property and say that would be good. I get permission on it first, and then I find out if it's good or not.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome.
If that answers your question.
Yeah, 100%. Just because, like, when you think about it, I mean, obviously, you know, selfishly, you're probably thinking, like, okay, this is great. I have this piece, and you don't know, and you go and scout it. Maybe it turns up being a dud, but man, there's a lot of turkey on that. Now you could go turkey hunt with your kids or something, you know what I mean? Like, that could be that property and help the individuals out. No, I just always wonder that just because I never had the opportunity to outright drive around and do that. I've had the opportunity more so of what you just said, of just striking up a normal conversation, and it turns into like, hey, if you ever need an extra spot, we only have people that, like you said, rifle hunt here, and if you're only a bow hunter, you know, feel free to shoot some does. Or, you know, I've had times where I'm like, I'd even only take a doe or something like that. If I know that person's a hunter that just has a lot of hand, I'd be like, listen, if you need some does taken off, like, I'd be more than happy. And they're like, yeah, you could shoot anything, you know what I mean? And I always just think of, like, you hear stories of guys that would maybe go, and I don't even know if they're true stories or not, but like, the thing that comes to my head, like, my luck, I'd be in the spot where that one deer that guy's been chasing for 5 years and you end up taking, you know what I mean? Like, you'd be like, yep, thanks, that was your one time hunting this property, and never again. But no, it's neat how that comes about, because I mean, I've struck those conversations up at graduation parties for like students of mine when I get asked. And there was one recently that I went to, and I was like, man, it was close to me actually. And they had a camp and everything. I was like, this is just gorgeous up here. We struck up a conversation, and, you know, turned into like, hey, if you ever want to get together and come up here and hunt, you're nearby. And you know, that's all it was. It wasn't any, I did not ask. It was just a straight up, like invite, which is, I think, pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Those can turn into something too, man. I got invited on the place where I go mule deer hunting, you know, and the guy's like, hey man, I know you've been really trying, you know, you've trying to get a mule deer. My group of guys, is no longer interested in coming to where I go. So I figured I'd extend the offer to you. We joke about meeting people on the internet, but that's really what happened. He DM'd me through Instagram. And so, we struck up a conversation, had a couple really good conversations. I met him and we went hunting, and I killed my first mule deer. And a lot of it was because of this guy. Right. So, now I'm going back this year with the same guy again. So it's pretty cool to see like to build these relationships. And at the end of the day, that's really what it is. But I'll tell you one thing, Jeremy, I was thinking about in the last 18-ish, 20-ish years, I've been hunting this main farm. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, I don't know what sparked this. Like it was, the grass was a little dewy when I was there in the shade and I spun out just a little bit in a little bit of the grass going up the backside of this two track to this next pasture. And it was just, it wasn't anything major, just a little tire mark in there, you know? Mm-hmm. And I look back at my 18 years of being on this property and I can honestly say that I left it better than how I found it. Right. Which is crazy. Mm-hmm. Like I've never left a rut. I've never broken a gate or a fence. If I do come across a broken gate or fence, I fix it. I've installed satellite dishes on homes on this farm. I've herded cattle on and off of this property. I've helped with, one guy, I think one year the guy was having trouble with his wagon. I helped him with a wagon, the guy who cash rents it. And then I've never left a rut. Like I've never left a gate open. I've never, mm-hmm. like all of these things over the course of the year, all these years, I've never done any of those things. I've never tried to affect the outcome of other hunters by messing with them or you know, asking, hey, you're in my, never saying stuff like you're in my spot or anything like that. I've never done any of that ever. And so it's almost like I try to fly under the radar with a lot with that farm in particular, because there are other people that hunt it. But mm-hmm. I look at that and I go, dude, if you want someone to hunt your property, that's the type of person that I would allow to hunt my property if I own property. Right. Someone who's extremely respectful. And I was kind of proud, you know, like not to beat my chest or anything, but I was kind of proud of that fact. Like mm-hmm. I'm treating this ground like it is my own ground in a way that's very positive. Not like, hey, this is my ground, because it's not, but I'm treating it like it is and how I would want people to treat it. So it's one of those things where I just, I don't know what brought that up as I'm coming out of, I had to, a gate had fallen over. It's an old gate that's pretty much mm-hmm. just there to keep cattle in, and they swing it open when they're pulling out cattle or putting cattle in. And so I stood it up. I tightened some wire at the base of it, and then, you know, so it wouldn't fall to the ground anymore. And I was like, that got me thinking, and I was kind of proud of that.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't, like, what are the, if you ever kick me off this farm, what are the reasons?
Yeah.
For me losing permission on this farm, what would the reason be? So,
right. Yeah. It's funny too, how you mentioned about meeting people too, through like social media and stuff like that. There was one of my good friends and who I hunt with, and kind of like you, I go on out of state trips with, majority of all my out of state hunts have been with, my good friend Albert now. And we met at the Pennsylvania Outdoor Show, and it was just like, I was working the tethered booth and he checked out, and I just said, you know, phone number for like the receipt type of ordeal. And he gave me the 570, and every person that gave me that 570 beginning area code, I asked like, oh, where are you from? Cause originally where I'm from in Northeast PA, that's the area code for it. And he's like, oh, well, I'm not originally from here. I'm originally from Ohio. And my wife, like, this is where we're at. And my family's at now. And he goes, oh, and he said the spot. And I was like, holy cow, no way. That's in my district where I went to school. That's where I have friends that live there, and their family, like their parents. So that's awesome. This was such a small world. That's pretty cool. He goes, yeah, like what's exchange numbers. And he's like, maybe you could come out and do a turkey hunt with me. I was like, sure. You know, you think like people say stuff like that all the time. And we would message here and there, nothing too crazy. And then finally, like as the spring was starting to come, he's like, hey, I'm going out to back home to Ohio. If you want to come out and hunt turkey. I was like, sure, let's do it. I have the time this year. I'm done coaching. And next thing you know, I drove out there, and we had to drive. We drove separately just because like I was just like, well, I'll have my truck just in case my wife needs me. I could leave. I don't have to. I'm not pinned down with him, making him leave his family and everything like that. And we drove out there. We chatted like as we were driving in separate cars the whole way out. And it was funny because my wife and his wife were both saying, like, you're going to die. Like, you're going to get killed. Like, this person's going to kill you. You have no idea who they are. That type of ordeal. And we get along so well. We've yep. hunted Ohio together. We've hunted Maryland together. We're actually just this past week, we were chatting again, and I wasn't sure if I was going to do Maryland the opening weekend again. And he's like, yo, I said, are you doing it? He's like, yep. I'm like, all right, I'll do it with you again. Like yeah. it's just, even though it might be for a weekend, I might be able to get down there again at some point, but it's just to go down and get a chance to go out early and hunt and spend time with him. That's all I care about.
Yeah. And that's the joke. Like, everybody was like, oh, you met this dude on the internet? What yeah. are you into, Johnson? What are you into, dude? And so, yeah, man. And I said this year, well, I said it at the end of last year. I said, well, I think I'm going to take it easy this year. I'm only going to hunt South Dakota, potentially, and Iowa. Well, now I have some opportunities that have been have fallen on my plate again, like they do every year. And now I'm sitting mm-hmm. here going, Jesus, how much do I want to add? I got the green light from my wife. It's just that I've also promised to coach football, you know, mm-hmm. this year too. So, one of the opportunities is the first week of September. The other one is the first week of October. And then of course the chaos that ensues when I go in the, you know, to the rut here in right. Iowa. And so, you know, I at the end of the year, if I don't fill a tag, I have those options available to me for, mm-hmm. you know, like those tags, if I want to go like try something late season on a statewide tag or something like that. And so we'll see. I don't know what I'm yeah. going to do yet, but it's like, I want to fill my plate, but I also want to coach football. So it's that balance we all talk yeah. about. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. You only live once, right?
Yep. Well, that's why I was laughing last night because, my wife, she said, hey, a friend of hers, their husband is turning 40 and they're having a party. And it was like that first weekend of September. I was like, nope, I'm going to Maryland. I was like, you know, happy birthday to him. Yep. That type of ordeal. She's like, is it on the calendar? I'm like, I'm putting it on right now. She goes, well, technically. And I was like, shut up. Like, just yeah. busted her. I was like, I told you the other day about this. No, I it's right. in. It's, and I right. literally leaned over, grabbed it off the nightstand. I was like, dad's in Maryland hunting. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's good stuff. Before we, I don't even know what we're going to talk about, but before we get into what we are going to talk about, we got to run through some partners here and send a huge shout out to the brands that support the Nine Finger Chronicles, support the Sportsman's Empire. And the first one that I want to talk about is obviously one of the longest running partners of the show, and that's Wasp Archery. Wasp has been around for a long time. I've shot a lot of deer with their broadheads. One in particular that I find that just, as far as a mechanical is concerned, that just does a shit ton of damage, and that is the three-blade jackhammer. On great shots, it's great, and on bad shots, it's great, right? You know, those gut punches, there's a lot of damage, and they go through the deer, creates two holes, a lot of pain, and they just sit down. They don't go far, and if you're patient with them, you'll find them, right? And so that is the testament of a really good broadhead, is not when it works on the perfect shots, but when it works on the imperfect shots. And that's how I judge my equipment, right? And so huge shout out to WaspArchery.com. I do have a discount code, NFC20. So go to WaspArchery.com and check out their full lineup of broadheads. Vortex Optics, man. I got a package in the mail from Vortex, and they're like, here, take this product, mess around with it, let us know what you think. Oh, by the way, you can't talk about it until the first week of August, which is just stupid. I think it's dumb on their part that they trust me enough to give me like some prototype, and then they're like, hey Dan, don't tell anybody about it. And so all I'm going to say, it's badass. It's going to make hunting more efficient for you guys, and just less things to carry in the woods, I guess. So keep an eye out for that. On top of that, go to vortexoptics.com. Take a look at their rifle scopes, their red dots, their range finders, their binoculars, everything that goes along with optics. They have a great apparel line. They have sunglasses that I need to, I think I sat on them or something. They broke the nose piece broke, so I'm going to have to take advantage of their VIP warranty. VortexOptics.com, go check them out. Code Blue Sense. Hey, you want to hear another thing that makes me a dumbass?
Yeah. Let it rip.
So yesterday, I'm just like, dude, I can't wait. And so I'm trying to get out the door. I finished doing work in the morning, trying to get out the door. I got all these people talking to me like, hey, where are you going? I'm just like, I'm getting batteries. I'm getting my cameras lined up. I'm going to go freshen up my mock scrapes, whatever, put that preorbital gel on them. And what did I forget? Sitting on my front step, all of my Code Blue preorbital gel that. So when I got there, I opened my back door. I'm like, God, you know, you have a grown up temper tantrum. So I had one of those, and I didn't do it, but I wanted to freshen up my mock scrape kits with that scrape mate on the ground. So I made the scrapes. I just didn't put any scent in it because I forgot it. But if I would have, I would have used the scrape mate. I would have used the Ropidote mock scrape kit preorbital gel that they have. I've had really good success with that over the years. On top of that, they have like real and synthetic deer urines. They have scent elimination products like laundry detergent and sprays and things like that. So go to codebluescents.com, enter the discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Reveal trail cameras. I got them out, dude, and they work. Like, I haven't set the Ultra up because I want the Ultra to capture the biggest deer that I have available this year, and that's going to probably be on the other farm that I have.
Got it.
And so I don't know if I'm going to try to get it there this week or if I'm going to go next week or whatever the case is, but I'm going to take that 8-hour round trip to get down there for about 2 hours of work, maybe 3 hours of work. And it's going to be a long day, but I need to get it done. These cameras, man, you use Reveals, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Dude, they're just so easy to use.
Yeah. And they work. So I mean, easy. That's the kicker, man. They work. There's times where I'll be on Facebook and all those groups and everything along those lines. Man, Reveals to me, they just perform. I've never had an issue with one. And what I've done, I was trading in, they had that trade-in program with Exodus cameras. I mean, working like the customer service was so easy. So I'm sure if you do have any issues, the customer service will clearly take care of you too.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so, man, and dude, I had a conversation on the Hunting Gear podcast a while back with a guy. They're doing great things. The Ultra is awesome. But man, some of the stuff that they are talking about doing, like behind the scenes that I'm not supposed to share quite yet, is going to change the freaking game.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
we're talking like, I don't know. I'm just going to say it changed the game. Like it's going to start getting crazy, the technology that they're going to start bringing to the table. So, keep an eye out.
Yeah.
You know, say what you want about where technology is going and how it affects deer hunting, but just keep an eye out for what they're doing because it's going to be pretty badass.
Awesome.
What they're doing. And I think probably by 2027, you're going to start seeing some of that stuff. So, go to tacticam.com/cameras, check out the last year's 3.0s, the new Ultra from this year, and then pay attention because they got some cool things coming. Okay, and then last but not least, Full Sneak Gear. I haven't set the discount code up yet, but here in the next couple weeks, I plan on doing a buy one, get one free type scenario, and I need to get rid of some inventory so I can create some new shirts for the fall. And man, I don't have a warehouse. I have an office above my garage. And so I have two tables that are full of stuff. I want to get rid of them and then make room for the new stuff. So it's going to be a buy one, get one free type code. And, make sure you're following on Instagram, the Nine Finger Chronicles or Full Sneak Gear. And I'll make sure that, I post all that stuff. Okay. I've whored out. I've made my money. I've made my sponsors happy. Jeremy, what have the last couple conversations that we've had been, right? We talked about identifying terrain, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we talked about access. I couldn't remember if we said we were going to get ready for like, I can't remember what our last what we said we'd be hitting up. I know I was like kind of excited about it because I was like, oh yeah, we could definitely talk about that.
Yeah. But because we're procrastinators and we didn't write anything down, I don't think so. I wrote anything here. I don't know if you can see this. Here are the notes that I take.
Nice. When,
like, those are the notes I take when I. It's just like scribbles.
Yeah, no one can looks read like. It. Yeah, it looks like my ninth grade fingers. Notes.
Yeah, yep. Right. I only have nine fingers, so there's that. But what would be the next progression after we talk about identifying terrain features? We talk about access. I think we've talked even a little bit about time of year and when mm-hmm. to start attacking. Do we have a conversation about like summer scouting? I mean, that's what the last two conversations have been. Do we talk about like a trail camera plan? I mean, that's only a trail camera plan is really only good for private and states that allow trail cameras
anymore. Right.
And so, what's the next step in these conversations?
The trail camera thing would actually be not a terrible idea. The other plan would be, being ready, like with your actual gear, I feel like too, like making, like I've seen a lot of people the last week kind of go through inventory of like, hey, I'm going through inventory checking. Like, luckily I did because this strap actually isn't going to work. That's another,
let's do it. Let's do yeah. gear. Let's do gear. Yeah. I like right. that. So I'm going to start off this one and I'm going to say that, for the first time in my life, I organized one thing before I ended up going and putting all my shit. Well, and when I say putting all my shit away, I mean piling it up in a little room somewhere and just letting it sit, right?
Yep.
Every year I have a fear of a mouse popping up out of my clothes I don't know, a mouse popping up out of my clothes or making a nest and just chewing holes and shitting everywhere. But this year I actually organized all of my trail cameras. So I knew exactly where they were at. They were in a box, all lined up, nice and neat, prepped. I even wiped them down a little bit, got some spider webs off them. And that really saved me a little bit of time yesterday getting them out and getting them ready and mm-hmm. then changing the batteries or putting new batteries in and everything like that. So I know that doesn't sound like anything groundbreaking, but it helps, man. It's just these little things, especially when you're in my shoes and you have these, you got three kids, you're on the go all the time and you're looking for windows to get out and do stuff. These little windows, if you're spending 10 minutes looking for something and then that window of 30 minutes now shrinks down to 20 minutes. And then right. by the time you get out there, you say, I want to shoot my bow for 30 minutes. Well, now you're only really shooting your bow for 10 minutes,
yeah.
right? Because something's going to happen. You're going to get pulled away early or something like that. And so just like preparedness, putting stuff away at the end of the season helps. And I'm horrible at that, man.
Yeah, I think you hit all valid points and it's all true because I've tried to do that and exactly what you said, something always pops up in the middle of something that I'm doing where I'm like, hey, I have 30 minutes and it ended up being only 10 and I'm still not done, did not accomplish what I really needed to accomplish. But I use that time to do that. But the trail camera cleanup is vital. And the one thing that I did too last year that is going to help me is I marked with my cameras. I put like I number them so then that way when I do put it in the bin that I do use, I use like a soft bin that it's like a shoe bin basically, so it has like a slot for each camera and I put a number on it so when I take it out and I put it back on the tree, I know which one it is and I'm not just like when I hit reactivate, it's not just, okay, which camera is this one? I don't remember. So now that way I know which one it is. And if I need to rename it or reposition it in my app, I'm able to do that. So that was the one thing that I did. And that helped me out already because there was like two of last year's cameras that I just, you know, put new batteries in and hung those up last time. And then with my clothing, same thing. I keep mine in bins. Right now they're a little mixed. I try to do a good job where I have like two bins. One is like late season gear, and obviously that's like my bigger bin just because of the bigger the gear is compared to then like my base layers and like, you know, early to mid season is in that one. And right now they're a little bit mixed, but that day's coming up here soon where I'll just be like, when no one's home, I could just go in the garage, lay everything out, look at it like, ooh, I think I need a new this because this seems pretty worn out type of ordeal.
Right. Right. How do you know when it's time? Let's stay on apparel and clothing for a second. Like, how do you know when it's time to get something new? Right. I've had some pieces of clothing that I've had for 10 years, man. It works great. Yeah. So I keep using it. Like, when do you decide, especially for clothing, it's time to upgrade or try something different?
I feel like for me, what I've done is obviously if there's like holes and all that stuff in it and you know, in certain aspects, but my thing is if it's like a mid layer type of hoodie and it doesn't seem as thick anymore, you know what I mean? Like it just loses that little fluff. Bit of thickness. Yeah. That fluff to it. That's when like, I don't necessarily get rid of it. I might even, I'll ask like my nephew or somebody like that, like, hey, do you want this? And I'll give it to him. Or if not, I just use it for camping and whatever. But then that's when I'll replace it and get something of similar, you know, piece. But that's what I've done. Or if like, you know, you wear something and you're like, oh, it just didn't do its job or what I was hoping it would do. And you gained some pounds or lost some weight. Now you got to get a different size. To me, but that main thing is definitely like even the base layers. Like you said, I have some First Light base layers that I've been running since like 2018 and they're still perfectly fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. For me, I mean, so obviously there's benefits of doing what I do. And last year I had a partnership with, what was it? Huntworth, right?
Yep.
And so Huntworth, you know, sent me a ton of clothes. So I got re-upped 2 years ago with a whole bunch of Huntworth clothes. And that's the benefit, right? But when I look for it, knowing it's time, like, you're 100% right. Like, you can only wash something so many times, especially if it is a next to skin layer or an insulation layer where it loses some of that. And you can tell, like in the tree stand on some of those crisp mornings, or, you know, you put it on right after the sun goes down behind the trees and it doesn't have what it used to have. And maybe that's just different scenarios, but I'll tell you what, man, there is a shelf life for some of this apparel that is designed to stop wind and designed to have heat. And anytime, like, there could be, and I don't know about you, but I am the person who I buy my gear for a reason and I spend money on my gear for a reason, and that's to use it and to use it like it's designed to be used. And like, I got holes in shit, especially in, you know, in Iowa where there's a thorn around every corner and you're walking through multiflower rows or through, you're walking by a locust tree or some shit like that. And the next thing you know, it's like tear. And so, you know, maybe if it, a little bit of duct tape or you get a patch, an iron-on patch, or you know, like back in the long time ago, I dropped my hunting clothes off at my mom's house and she would patch up the crotches. She would patch up the knees and things like that. Yep. And so it looked a little funny, but that helped prolong the life of that garment. But yeah, man, I use the shit out of it until it really can't be used anymore. And then I pass it on to somebody else and then I get new, right?
Yeah.
I'm to the stage now where I don't know if my kids are going to be my size because my wife is so small, but I keep a lot of stuff hanging around just in case it comes down to, you know, hey, it's time to pass some stuff on to my kids or to my stepdad.
Yeah, there's one piece I know this year that I know I need to swap out or get a new of, and that is a base layer from First Light, just because I think during turkey season, I was like, yeah, this one ran its course. Like, kind of like what you're saying, it could only be washed so much. And that's their kiln, which is like their, I just looked it up while we were just saying. I think it's like they're, it is a midweight. It's like 250 Merino X.
Yeah.
So they do count it as a midweight because their their furnace is their heavyweight, and it is heavy. But this one, I feel like what I've liked about that specific hoodie, the or not hoodie, but the base layer of the Kiln is you could wear that something light over top. And like if it's mid-October and it's getting down a little bit, you have a vest. That's all you need. And like for me, I sweat a lot. So I've always. And that's, I'm like, I would rather spend more money on base layers than anything else just because I know if it could dry quick, because I know I'm going to sweat going in. And then on top of it after that, it's that. Yeah, it's fascinating because I do like watching and seeing some of those things that, what's his name? Barklow. Is this John Barklow or something like that from Sitka? Like he's like one of their main designers, and he's been on like a ton of podcasts with like Dudley and other people, but he's like the individual that is knows his stuff when it comes to designing and why you need type of technology in this piece and how he goes about layering. And it's funny because I just remember as a kid, the reason why I didn't like hunting was because I was always cold.
Oh, yeah. And
it was, you know, because it was because my dad put me basically in a Michelin Man Cabela's, you know, outfit, and I wore that in and I was sweating, you know, so bad, and I was freezing the rest of the day.
Yeah. There was no such thing as comfortable. I would wear like four cotton hoodies with the lightest, like nothing that I wore was camo except the lightest outer layer. Mm-hmm. Was usually some old turkey pants or some old, you know, that was too big for me by itself. But when you're wearing three pairs of sweatpants and then three pairs of hoodies, and then you're soaking wet when you get in there, and you go from uncomfortably hot and wet to wet and cold because cotton does not dry at all like Merino does or have any of that wicking ability. And so it's just like, this sucks. I can remember before the days of Merino, man, I was chasing this really good buck and I didn't have that stuff. And I had to come out early one day. And what happened when I got down early? Like my toes were, I was in so much pain because of my toes and my legs and my upper body. I was shivering so bad. I couldn't control it. Like I was probably getting close, right, to hypothermia. Yeah. I get down and I'm like, okay, maybe if I walk around a little bit, maybe I'll warm up. And I didn't. And so I was like, screw it. I'm going back to the truck. And as I'm getting down and I'm walking back to the truck, that buck shows up. So that is a reminder that if you don't have the right gear, the gear can cost you an opportunity.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not saying sit here and tough it up because I didn't. I tried to and I just couldn't anymore.
Yeah.
And it cost me. So gear is like, especially for clothing, gear is important. Or out west, even when I hike all the way out there, I'm hot and sweaty. I cool down a little bit. Then I layer up. Right. I don't know. How do you walk into the tree stand in the mornings?
What
do
you wear? Yeah. So if it's like, any of my major outerwear, I definitely do not wear that in, obviously. Like, for example, let's pick a cold opportunity. During rifle season this year, the first opening day in PA, it was cold and it was going to stay cold. I wore like just my base layer top. I did end up putting on, I think, my pants. Like I still wore my base layer pants. I still wore my pants, like that type of stuff. And then I carried in with me like my mid layer and everything. But however, the next day was going to be a lot colder and I brought extra socks that day. I actually hiked up and I was like, man, it's so heavy. But I hiked up in just my base layers and that's it. And when I got to my tree, now I don't hunt from an elevated platform or anything like that. I was like a foot off the ground. I put my platform on and I stand up over and I was high up on a ridge so I could see down. That's the way I kind of hunt during rifle season. But as I got there, I was basically in my underwear and then I put on new socks, which was like in the dark, such a pain in the ass to do doing that, put it. And then I got dressed there and I was good for a little bit. And then I don't know what ended up happening if I just didn't cool down long enough, but I ended up getting pretty cold and it just like, it hit, I don't know, 11 o'clock, 11:30, and Jim was above me a couple ridges, and I was like, dude, I'm done. I need to walk up to you, because like you, like I tried to tough it out, and I was just, I couldn't get warm. I got okay, but it was my feet. And I always struggle with my feet just because, I feel like I need to get like a wide boot for just rifle season, just so I have that extra room for it to breathe, because man, that's my killer. My killer is definitely my feet, because I'll wear only one pair of socks, like a good heavyweight sock. But then what I'm assuming is that there's no airflow and it just sweats and stays in there. And that's it. Game over.
Right. I'll tell you, my e-bike has helped me out a lot in one farm in particular. I use it more for not spooking deer as much as walking would do. But on my other farm, I don't use the e-bike just because, I can't really, I have to walk along a lot of the ways, 'cause there's like a field and there's timber I got to cross through. But I pretty much just go in my base layers. And then when I get to my stand, I'll throw on my overalls, but just sit in my overalls for like, keep them open, so all that heat comes out, right? And then I get to the point where I'm almost cold, and then I start layering up again.
Okay.
Right? There's like this threshold, and I try to do that right before the sun starts to come up, so that when it does come time, I still have time to sit and relax a little bit, and I'm not moving so much in the tree. The only downfall of that is that you have a huge pack at this point.
Yeah.
Overalls, your outer layer and your insulation layers and things like that. You have a huge pack. And if you're carrying your bow on your pack or you have anything else in it, it can get a little awkward climbing up the tree. But it's you got to weigh your options, right? Are you going to sweat my balls off, or am I going to be cold and then try to be comfortable after that? So So a lot of the times I'm not even wearing a stocking cap in the mornings when it's really cold, because I just want to get rid of that heat as fast as possible.
Yeah. That's actually a really good tip, of not wearing that skull cap 100%. Like I made that dumb decision before. And like I've lately, the last like year, 2 years, I'm like same thing for you. Just let it breathe. And then once I'm getting cold, then I toss that on.
Yep. Outside of clothing, I'm trying to think if there's any other tips or things that really help me. I mean, I've talked about this till I've been blue in the face, and that's the boot covers. I don't wear big bulky boots anymore. I wear my hiking boots, and I use, Arctic Shield boot covers. They work really well. And I do not see myself going back in any direction other than that. I mean, even when I'm out west, I take those, stuff those in the bottom of my bag, and if I'm spotting or I'm glassing, I'll throw those on, and boom, really comfortable.
Yeah, real quick, because that Saturday of opening day, I was okay feet wise towards the end of the day. I got a little cold, and then that night I gave Jim my Arctic Shields, because he was like, "Oh man, I'm gonna be freezing up on that stand." Blah 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 blah. Like, it's the metal. I was like, "Hey, take these. Go ahead and use them." He's messaging me. He's like, dude, these things are awesome. And as I'm sitting there, like, I felt like my nuts were up in my throat because it was so cold. Yeah. I was like, all right, do work.
Yep. Yeah. Clothing, I can't think of anything else. Let's just go to bows, because we're both bow hunters. Mm-hmm. How many years do you let a string go on your bow before you replace it?
I would definitely say when you start seeing fraying, for me too, sometimes like we talk sports a lot. I'm very superstitious about things. And the last couple of years I've let Nora, my oldest daughter, pick the color. So I've been rocking the pink and stuff, whatever she decides, and along those lines, it's brought some pretty good luck. But, for me, once I start seeing a little bit of that fraying, and if I have to continuously put some wax on it, that's when I'm like, okay, I need a new set of strings. And sometimes if you've shot a bow a lot, and obviously you got to tune it and everything along those lines, man, I remember my Elite Era from a couple years ago. I had great success with it, and I had the stock strings on it from Elite. I think they're Winner's Choice, I think, or something, or I forget what brand is under the Outdoor Group, but they it was fine. And then I threw a custom set on from Drawn Archery, a buddy of mine, Tony. And man, that thing shot like a brand new bow. It was unbelievable. Like it felt different. It held different. It was tuned perfect. And like, I for sure know it was a little bit faster, so much faster, but it felt when at release and the impact of the arrow, I knew it definitely was an upgrade. But yeah, I would definitely, and the reason why I wanted new strings put on that was because of, it definitely was, those strings were definitely worn. And you got to look at the cables too, of, just making sure that like we're going in between, like say your roller guard, like stuff isn't fraying, you're serving along in those cables.
Right.
Once you see that too, I mean, your string might be perfectly fine, but you might need new cables, that type of stuff. And, you know, that's when you got to take a look and start looking at that.
Yeah. Generally, it takes me about 2 years to get to that point. So this is the second season on my current string setup. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to ride it out this season. And then next year, I'll be getting new. Man, I'll tell you what. Getting a new bow is badass. Getting new strings and having the customization is badass. But you know what's even more badass than all of that? Being able to pick your bow up from the last season and not really have to do too much adjustment to it. Mm-hmm. Just pick your bow up and start shooting again. Yep. And I had to weigh those options this year between getting a new bow and just picking up and shooting again. And I kind of started leaning towards just going with what I have again. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how many years I've had with this bow. I'm guessing I'm going on 4 or 5 now, and I'm happy with where this bow's at and how it's shot for me throughout the years. I just need to, I just need to put more effort. It's funny these days I'm saying I need to put more effort into, and then fill the blank with that. Like I need to put more effort into this. I need to put more effort into this. I need to put more effort into this. Well, if I started putting more effort into all of these things, I wouldn't have time to sleep. So, you know what I mean? So that's where I'm at. But it is pretty badass being able to pick your bow up from last season and start shooting almost right where you left off.
Yeah. That's the nice thing. Like the way, like I set my lead up, my Artist, which was last year's hunting bow that I used, I set it up for a Total Archery Challenge, and all I needed to do was basically resight it in for the arrows, because I just literally grabbed my hunting arrows that I used, brought them to our local range for our public range. I sighted that in, and I'm like, okay, I'm good to go. Like, I got my hunting arrows, I got what I need to do, and just do a little bit of broadhead testing with it, and I might get... I've kept it simple. Like what you were saying about putting in effort, Dan, years ago, I was all customization when it comes to arrow building, putting wraps on, gluing my own. Now I just go to ultra.com, ultraarrows.com, and I buy the 6-pack pre-fletch. All I have to do is cut them, glue the inserts in, and I'm good to hunt. That's all I do. I think some of that customization stuff is awesome. And I think, some people make really cool things as far as like the wraps go. And, like Mike over at the boutique, I don't know if you've seen any of his stuff online, like he could make any design, like some of your full sneak gear, like that zombie one that you have, like, I love that design. Yeah. Like he could make that into an arrow wrap. Like it would be so sweet, but
that would be badass.
Yeah. I'm telling you. Yeah. Yeah. So Mike at the boutique, I'll send you his info. Really cool dude. But he, I love to support him, but I'm like, man, I don't have the time to come down at night. Like you said, then I'm like, I'm cutting into my sleep, and I like my sleep at this point.
Yeah. I feel you. Okay. Bows. I'm trying to think of it. Oh, let's just talk about what we like in a bow real quick.
Okay.
And what I've kind of found that, so I have a 30-inch draw. Mm-hmm. All right. I like a 33-34 inch draw. That's, I just have been, or not, sorry, not
inch ATA. Draw. Yeah.
Axle. I'm sorry.
Yep.
So I got a 30-inch draw. I like a 33 34 inch axle to axle. I like the bigger the brace height, the better for me. So if you can find me a bow that has that kind of stuff with a really smooth draw, I'll be a happy camper, man. I like a limb stop. I like a hard stop. I don't like a spongy type of, you know, am I there yet type full draw. And then outside of that, you find me those things, I'm pretty happy with the bow. I am even okay with a little bit of what they quote unquote hand shock, but bows today don't have the type of hand shock that they used to have, what, 10 years ago.
No.
Right? Right. I don't like carbon bows that much, although I haven't shot a lot of bows recently. I shot the new Matthews. I shot the new, and I shot a couple. I shot the Proven 34 recently from Bowtech. That's a good bow. I've heard great things about the SS 34, the super smooth 34. That's a 34 axle to axle, 30 inch draw. I've heard good things about that. But I really haven't had the time to go out and shop for bows and shoot the newest models like I have in the past. So, I'm a long axle to axle guy, dude. I want comfortable. I want stabilization at full draw. And I don't think I got that when I was, shooting a 30, 31 yeah. sub 30
yeah.
bow.
Yeah. That's having that longer draw length for you is definitely, you know, going to make that more difficult with a shorter axle to axle bow. For me, I like that 30. I like a 31, a 32 seems to be very, very good for me. Like I know, like even a 30 and some changes is probably where I would like to draw my max. I'm only a 27 and a half, 28 inch draw, depending on the bow model and stuff. But for me, same thing. I like a solid back wall spongy. I do not like just because I tend to, relax a little bit more than I know I should. So that shoulder wants to go forward. Like there was, I won't forget, I had a Matthews VXR and that sucker just constantly wanted to go forward on me. Like that let off was not the right let off for me. I think even that one might've been like an 80. So that was not at the time. It definitely was not a very good bow. I got rid of that one pretty quick. But yeah, that's same thing. Like that's what I love about my elites, like that era that I had, which was a carbon bow, and they made leaps and jumps from what for their first one. It was actually very impressive, but it was in the smooth mods, and this artist was actually in the performance mods, and I was shocked at how comparable they were, the smooth mods to that performance mod. And there was a post from, I made a clip of me drawing back on the buck that I shot in Ohio. And when I shot him, there's somebody commented like, well, at least he has the right bow poundage, because I was able to just draw straight back without like ramping it back or anything like that. But same thing, it needs to be a smooth draw. It has to have a solid back wall, and I could care less if there's that little bit of vibration that shot. Like you said, no, none of them have that really anymore. And if it is, it's like, dunk, and it's gone pretty quickly. But yeah, brace height, I like to, the longer, the better basically. And for me, it's about like feeling comfortable, like that grip. That's, you hear people will love a Matthews, technology and everything along those lines, but then they're like, but I would never own one. And you ask why, and they're like, I just don't like their grip. I don't like their grip. Yeah. I don't like their grip. And, that's a kicker to, for a lot of people. And that's why some people like a certain grip and they throw those Ultra Views grips on and stuff like that. But I like my Elite grip, and I think Bowtech has a very similar Elite grip, like, because it's they've made some changes and add some pieces to it, but like that's where the customization with like you as the shooter really comes into play and helps you get it towards what you want.
Yeah, I'm looking for I want a fat grip. I feel like I would do better with a fatter grip. I need to find, that's one thing that I do need to mess around with a little bit, would be customization options or aftermarket type of accessories that you can add to bows that have that. But in defense of Matthews, And I do have to say something real quick about that company, because I've been, I don't want to say a Matthews hater over the years. I've just not liked the bows that they've brought to market in the past. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was for their draw cycle throughout the years that I didn't like. I will say that whatever they've done, I don't know what they've done as far as, I'm not an engineer, but that has gotten a lot better for me, in my opinion, over the course of the year. So if I feel like I need to be fair with certain products that I've been critical of over the years, and like and brands where I'm like, oh God, I hate that. I hate that. I don't like that. I don't like that. I don't mind it. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, and so they've done something to their bows where I just want to be fair. Right.
Oh yeah.
I like when like, the whole technology now that's pretty much in almost all bows is you don't even need a bow press anymore for a lot of the major things. That's badass, dude.
Yeah. It changes the game for everybody. And same thing what you said, like I actually really, I shot the new Lift X, and I think that is a, maybe because as I'm trying it out and shot it just to test it, like the artist has the performance mods on it. So when I shot that Lift X at the bow shop, I was like, that's very similar to that. Like, wow, like I could actually, I feel like I would be able to shoot that. And then I shot a Hoyt at the outdoor show, and I was like, the aluminum one, I was like, this is also another impressive, just like riding a bike. Like yeah. You can't go wrong anymore. And like what you were saying, you almost could pick a bow now blindly and just know that if you want that certain technology into it, like obviously Bowtech has the limb shift technology. Matthews put that on in theirs as well this year in a different way. Elite has their tunability with their set lock technology. Like depending on which one you want, you can almost blindly anymore pick what it buy one and you would like it. Like that's awesome. I mean, yeah. Back in the day, I mean, I still go shoot them. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you don't have to do that anymore, but you almost could look at a bow or two bows and be like, I like these two technologies into it. Now let me figure out which one I want to shoot and buy. Yeah.
That would be awesome to do a truly blind test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you didn't see the brand, all you got to do, you were blindfolded and you had a bow set up for your draw length and your poundage. And that was it. Right. Yep. And then, all you would do, you would hand me the bow, I would grip it, and then you would help me get locked into the D loop. I would draw, I'd shoot two arrows out of it, and I'd have to give my opinion on what I felt out of that. And then I would say, keep, you know, throw it over to the side. I'd compared maybe two at a time, like a bracket style. And then you whittle down to the last two. And then I wonder how many people would be surprised at what they do. Because I know a lot of people who buy bows just because the brand name.
Yeah. Yeah. They're Matthew guys or they're Elite guys or Hoyt. Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
So, which tells you right there, like if you're surprised by what you pick, it's because you're not picking the right bow for you. You're picking something because of marketing. You know what I mean?
You're influenced. So,
yeah. You're influenced. I like that. Man, I don't know what else to say. Other than, like I shoot the React. I shoot the React, from Trophy Ridge for one reason and the ease of getting dialed in. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an easy one. The Vapor Trail, it's a limb driven system. Back in the day, back in the day, I was doing cable driven stuff. It was awesome. But I felt like over time, things started to get loose on that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get loose when I, the only negative thing I have to say about limb driven stuff is when I'm trying to do spot and stock, or if I'm, you know, like dragging my shit through some thickness, it's just one extra thing that,
like extra string. Yeah.
Extra string that could get caught on something. And that's happened a couple times for me, but it doesn't really, it doesn't really affect it too terribly much.
No,
I don't even do anything crazy other than I add hockey tape to my grip. That's all I do. Mm-hmm. Just like some athletic, wrap that up. And that's because I don't, for some reason, Even if it gets tacky, it starts to roll up a little bit. I'm okay with that. I don't like the bare grip on something because of, like, whether it's cold or whether it is slick. I feel like I want something with some grit on there that allows me to, like, I don't know, hold it better. So that's why I add hockey tape to the grip. But outside that, I don't add any dampeners or any, like, I'm not a mod guy, really.
My Jim and Josh, they got me on a skateboard tape. They got, and then I'll cut it short, and it just fits flat on the back end of my grip, and it's like, I love it, especially too. Like, if you shoot a lot, like, you know, you hunt maybe early season a lot, and it's hot and sweaty. Like, that's a nice little piece to maybe think about adding. Now it's just become like a little comfort, because it's helped with, like, torquing, because now my hand doesn't want to move. Like, I'd really would have to mess it up to do that. I'm running on my Elite. I have the CBE Trek Pro 2V, so it's a vertical double pin. I like a double pin just to have that extra opportunity to know, like, if a deer comes in, like, in my mind. And plus too, I practice that shot drop. Like, I try, and if I don't have to move my the pins at all, I don't need to. I just know where to hopefully aim, basically. And I practice that, so that way I know my drop. And kind of the same way, I keep my hunting set up very simple compared to when I shoot it for fun. If I'm doing, like, a total archery, all that stuff, I go minimal weights on stabilizers and stuff like that. Like, it just needs to perform in the heat of the moment. And that's more so of, like, making sure I can draw it back when it's very cold out, and then me executing the shot. Like, that's all I care about.
Yeah. Dude, have you seen some of this stuff that's coming out where it's like, you attach it to your bow and it's like a tripod?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So you don't have to use your shoulder. You just set it down and you can squeeze the trigger and it goes up and down and it attaches to your bow. Like, I can see something like that working just for setting up your bow and getting it dialed in. But at the same time, isn't part of archery, like, building the muscles and trying to, like, you're shooting, you're bow hunting for a reason, because it's harder.
Right.
It's harder than using a gun.
Yeah.
So why would you then want to turn around and use a system that would allow you to make what the reason why you're shooting archery in the first place is to make it easier? Like, I don't understand that. But then again, it's a company. Go for it. Good luck. I don't understand it.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one. I'm with you.
So, yep. Bow. Let's see. We got bows. We've talked about any arrows. Let's go through arrows real quick. For me, it just hasn't changed in a very long time. I'm shooting day six arrows, four fletch, with, if I'm deer hunting, I'm going to look at something different as far as maybe like a sharpshooter from Wasp or more of one of the traditional big cutting heads if I ever go elk. But I smoked my deer at 33 yards, my mule deer at 33 yards with a jackhammer expandable, and it did the trick, man.
Yeah,
my whitetails, it does the trick. And so it's a heavy arrow. I'm shooting about 550, between 500, 550, and tons of penetration with 30.
Ooh, I can imagine 30 inch draw. You know,
30 inch draw, 70 pounds, 550 grains. I mean, like, I'm shooting damn near a crowbar.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And so not a lot's going to stop that, you know, unless I hit joint, you know? And so I'm getting a shit ton of penetration. I mean, I've even, dude, at that weight, was it 2022 or one? I can't remember what year it was, but I frontaled my buck.
Okay.
And it went almost all the way in. Like, it went all but maybe 6 inches of my arrow into the chest cavity of that. So that's a ton of damage going frontal right in. Dude, I didn't hit heart. I didn't hit lung. I hit everything that connected those two. and my buck went jump, jump, fall over dead. And it was a sweet ass shot.
That's awesome.
And so I'm just like, I'm that guy who I get a really hard shot like that, of where this is a true test of an arrow, even with the mechanical opening and the energy loss from that. Just imagine if I had a fixed blade on that and what that would do.
Right.
But I had my mechanical performed, the penetration was amazing, and those types of shot make me never want to change my arrow setup again.
Yeah. Well, that's how I feel about last year's shot for me. Like, I'm shooting the Ultra Arrow, the micro, like the 4mm, so like the 0.166s. And I ran it base. Like I said, I bought it pre-fletched. I just threw on the Amazon lighted nock. Like we talked about that like couple weeks ago. And I used the Grim Reaper broadhead last year, the mini mag. So it's a 4-blade expandable and hard quartering away shot. Same thing. I shot like obviously like way back. And the only thing that was sticking out of the deer at the time was like the end of the fletching and the nock. That was it. And when I finally like was able to remove the arrow from the deer and I was able to clean the deer out, I hit the heart, like the bottom of the heart was split. And I was like, and my arrow, other than me dragging and flipping him over, that like broke the end of the arrow. Actually, it was still, the rest of it was perfectly fine, but it drove all the way up there. And I was like, yeah, I'm a believer in this. And same thing. It's only like a 465, 67 grain arrow. And now, like I said, I'm coming for shorter draw length. So I kind of want a little bit more speed, but at the same time, like it's heavy enough that it is going to hit hard. And I'm happy with that.
Let me ask you a weird question. It just kind of popped up in my head. What do you think is more important? An entry wound, a small entry wound, a big entry wound, like, or a big entry wound, or a big exit wound?
I would say big exit.
Yeah.
I mean, if your arrow hits where it's supposed to and it stays in, kind of like what I said with mine did, I mean, that deer maybe ran 12 yards. Mm-hmm. Like I said, he bounded 12, 15 yards, stopped, barrel rolled down about 8, and after that he just died right there.
Yeah.
So like it hit its spot, but I would rather have a big exit, so then that way you are, you know, you're able to, yeah, you're, that's what I would like.
Yeah. Obviously, so the wasp that I shoot has a really big entry, like it loses my guess is it loses a lot of energy on deployment on the entry. But then that carries through. The heads that intrigue me somehow are like, what are the ones that deploy inside? So the arrow, the head is mostly inside, and then the back blades open up while it's in the cavity. The little blades do, and then the bigger blades come out. What's that? I cannot remember. I don't understand why I can't remember this. Schwacker.
Okay.
Like the Schwacker type heads. Those are interesting to me. And I would love to see someone do because you know that everybody does these broadhead tests, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, look at this broadhead test. I want to see where a majority of, I'm guessing it is in deployment, right? The deployment of the head is where the most energy loss happens. But I would want to see where if there is a total energy loss category, where once my head deploys, how much energy is lost from deployment to the end of that cycle I don't even know like what you would call that, like the broadheads that open up that create the big entry hole, or the broadheads that open up in the internal cavity and do that. So I'm guessing the broadheads that open up like initially upon contact create the most damage and hemorrhaging However, when you get deployment inside of soft tissue, past bone, and it's inside soft tissue, then it's going to do a shit ton of damage there and potentially go farther. But there's the energy, like more energy loss in the soft tissue than the impact, and then no opening up in soft tissue. So it's already in the soft tissue and it's crushing everything that goes by. So I wonder if anybody's done, or maybe I'm just sounding like Will Ferrell in Old School. Like, what happened? I just blacked out.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that'd actually be a really cool study, actually.
Yeah. So somebody do that. Yeah, somebody please. Do that and then get back to us. Yeah. Yeah, man, I'm gonna rock that setup until something happens, like the companies go out of business. Like, that's the only way I can see myself changing that setup. I just feel very confident in that. I don't do lighted knocks, anything like that. What other gear type talk do we need to have, whether it's a preparation for the upcoming season, things we need to look at? Ropes, mm-hmm. cables mm-hmm. on tree stands, straps.
Check them out.
Like, this should just be a no-brainer.
Yeah, right? Now's the time to do all that. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple guys I know. When I stopped at the bow store, he was like, "Hey, you got this guy. I need this guy on my podcast." He fell out of his tree stand. He broke 7 vertebrae. Whew. Because a cable snapped or something. Jeez. Like that, or a rope broke on his safety harness or something, and he fell, broke 7 vertebrae, and then the next year came back out in the woods and killed a 197.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. So
check all that stuff. Yep. It's very important, man. You want to come home. You want to be able to hunt again, and you obviously your family wants to see you. So
exactly. So I was at Bass Pro Shop this past weekend, and dude, I love saddle hunting. Don't get me wrong. I love running and gunning. I love, like the very ultralight, like the Lone Wolf Assault. I've been using the Lone Wolf Assault forever. Right. It's one of my favorite stands of all time. And the technology, the balancing, I mean, it's just classic run and gun hunting, saddles, run and gun, you know, like, but I walked by those Millenniums, like, and I'm like, dude, I'm getting to the age where I'm just like, I can see, you want to talk about being able to spend more time in the tree when you have a recliner in your tree stand.
Exactly.
Like, I want that now. Like, I'm to the point where I'm like, dude, I'll spend 5 hours putting that tree stand up in the tree, but I want to be comfortable while I do it. And dude, there's something about that is really intriguing these days. Because if you can feel comfortable in the tree stand, you're not like hunched over and you're so tight and getting in some crazy nook of a tree, just get a little higher and get a little more comfortable. And then you just sit there all day. Maybe you bring like a little Coleman grill up in the tree stand with you and you can cook breakfast. And
I know,
you know, like some of these guys in these Texas hunting blinds that have big screen TVs and shit like that.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it don't look so bad.
Yeah, it doesn't look too terrible. Exactly.
But like some of these seats on these tree stands and some of these big tree stands, I mean, dude,
I know,
it looked pretty intriguing.
Mm-hmm. They don't. And like you said, though, they are comfortable. They are comfortable.
Yeah. So I got to look at. I want to look at something like that in the future, and maybe I just buy one of them. I think they're like $250, $300, and I set it up in like the best rut funnel that I can find, and just go there when I don't have anything else going on, when I can't find, you know, why not have some starting points that are really comfortable, and then when you want to micro adjust for your strategy, then you can go to your saddle or your, you know, your assault or whatever the case may be. So, it's all just different tools in the tool belt, my friend.
Yep. I'm with you on that one, Dan. I like it.
So, well, this has been, if anything else, like a BS session.
It was good. I like this one.
Yeah. A little preparation, a little, gear talk. I don't talk about gear on the Nine Finger Chronicles. This podcast is also going to launch on the Hunting Gear podcast too, because I feel like it's worthy of it. Outside of that, Jeremy, anything else we need to say before we shut her down today?
Nothing, man. Enjoy yourselves. And I, like you said, man, good vibes in, good vibes out. I love that.
All right. Take care, guys. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.